Here are the WGXC headlines for Friday, March 10th. Xi Jinping was given an unprecedented third term as China's president. A Norfolk Southern train derailed March 9th in Calhoun County, Alabama, hours before company CEO Alan Shaw testified in Congress to answer questions about a February 3rd derailment that led to a toxic chemical spill in Ohio. Long Island Republican Congressperson George Santos, known for his multiple lies, is offering to co-sponsor a bill to prohibit him from profiting off those lies if convicted of crimes for those lies. California Governor Gavin Newsom ended a $54 million contract with Walgreens on March 8th after the pharmacy giant pledged not to sell an abortion pill by mail in some conservative-led states. A judge struck down Poughkeepsie's good cause eviction law on March 8th, just like in Kingston, Newburgh, and Beacon, saying only the state can pass such a law protecting tenants. The state has not taken that effort yet. A former actor from the soap opera As the World Turns, Forbes March, was one of two men arrested by Ulster Town Police for siphoning used cooking oil. New York's Education Department is considering changes to state regulations on restraint and seclusion in the schools, and the Hudson Housing Authority is looking to build new public housing to replace the existing Bliss Towers and Columbia apartments.
This is Janet McKean from Caro, and you're listening to WGXC Acra 90.7 FM, hands-on radio.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show, an hour of information all about your community made from the community. We will hear a story today about how there is a proposal in Albany to allow insurance payments for birth services for doulas, and we will also hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. And it all starts after Jason Martin is finished with this song on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
This is the network, network. On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network, network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network, network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network, network.
And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network, network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network, network.
This is the news. This is the network.
The Catskill Town Board meets every first Tuesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. at the Catskill Town Hall and holds a committee meeting the third Wednesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. You can turn out in person at the Catskill Town Hall to speak at these meetings or tune in to a live web stream through the Catskill Town Board and WGXC. Go to wgxc.org/listen or click on the listen button at wgxc.org to tune in to any of the Catskill Town Board meetings, the first Tuesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. and the third Wednesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. at wgxc.org and townofcatskillny.gov.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program, administered in Greene County by CREATE, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXC's sustaining supporters, who provide critical monthly support to Wave Farm's radio station, WGXC 90.7 FM. Thank you.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Elizabeth LeJudis of Hanacroy, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC Daily News for Friday, March 10th. Go to the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about any of these stories. Andrea Macko reports in Porcupine Soup that three Catskill Middle School students were arrested after police say they put lithium from batteries in a toilet March 7th, releasing toxic fumes into the air. Catskill Central School District Superintendent Melissa A. Barrow said in a message to parents, quote, "The reaction was contained to the toilet, and students and staff were never in any danger. Staff closed off the bathroom and opened the window to let the room air out, and we notified police and fire services, who responded to the middle school as a precaution. Other than the closure of the bathroom, the incident did not cause a disruption to the school day," unquote. The Greene County Sheriff's Office arrested the three juveniles, one 13-year-old and two 12-year-olds. They were issued Greene County Family Court appearance tickets for second-degree arson, third-degree criminal mischief, fourth-degree conspiracy, second-degree reckless endangerment, and unlawful possession of noxious material. Read more about this story in Porcupine Soup. Mid-Hudson News reports that the New York State Attorney General Letitia James has gotten a court order on March 9th blocking 10 national gun distributors from selling parts or shipping gun parts into the state. The parts in question can be used to build untraceable ghost guns. When James filed the motion for the court order in January, she said, quote, "Companies that sell ghost guns, parts, and kits present a clear danger to all New Yorkers. These deadly weapons are unregistered, untraceable, and do not require any background check to purchase, which means they can easily end up in dangerous hands. Once again, we are taking action to stop the flow of ghost guns into New York and to protect our communities from gun violence," unquote. Read more about this story at Mid-Hudson News. Diane Valden with the Columbia paper reports that Copaic is the latest locality to talk about the local affordable housing crisis. And they actually took some action, too, but it was a unanimous February 28th town board decision for a six-month moratorium on major subdivisions. While not building houses will not add affordable places to live locally, Copaic Supervisor Jenny Mettler recognizes there is a problem, saying, quote, "This is not just a local crisis. There is a housing crisis in Columbia County," and in her recent State of the State address, New York Governor Hochul recognized this as a statewide crisis, unquote. But so far, Copaic has taken no action to create affordable housing besides creating committees and working groups to study the issue. So far, town officials are not talking about building affordable housing, but instead tweaking regulations that might help others build affordable housing. Read more about this story in the Columbia paper. And read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom, WGXC.org.
Kenny Loggins ain't lying. We're in the danger zone, and you have found the better weather. Friday, March 10th. A reminder for those of you whose lives aren't dictated by a cell phone, clocks go forward this Sunday for daylight savings time. Local early morning temperatures range from 17 degrees in Medusa to 25 just across the river in Skodak. Regional average soil temperature is 33 degrees. And despite the mild winter, that is below average, so that could push planting times forward a little bit, but we'll be keeping an eye on it. Conditions today turn from freezing to just cold around 10 a.m. 3 p.m., that mercury tops out at 43 degrees. Then, around 5 p.m., rain should start, then quickly turn to a mix. Then, all snow, definitely by 10 p.m. Overnight, 4 inches should fall. If our downsloping force field kicks in, that could be as low as an inch. Up in the hills, they might see as much as 6 or 7 inches. We're going to get a low temperature of 31 degrees by dawn. Then, snow should come to an end by noon, dropping perhaps another half inch on Saturday. We get a high of 40 degrees at 1 p.m. Then, a dry but somewhat windy afternoon. Watch for blowing snow. 24 degrees overnight takes us into a nice-looking Sunday. High temperature of 45 degrees is expected with light winds. Monday looks kinda scary. Lots of water. What kind so far looks like rain, but That could change to snow easily and pile up. But that will come into focus as it approaches. Which reminds me, check us out on Telegram for charts, local info, and maybe even a weekend forecast. Just look for the better weather, all one word. Sunset today will be at 5:41 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:12 a.m. Looking way up, we see X-class flare chances are at 10%. Otherwise, things are peaceful. So the wind speed is currently 402 kilometers per second at 4.3 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 5 megahertz till dark, then fair below 60 megahertz overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 4, unsettled. The current sunspot number is 155. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Hello. Hello, Mr. Taylor.
What do you want?
Turn on the radio.
I'm talking to you. I'm talking to you.
You're being grotesque.
The radio, remember? Make it work.
Radio. It tends to induce.
Got time. Slow down. Now it's pretty late.
Why don't you switch on the radio?
I refuse to discuss it any further.
Oh, please, you must.
Please don't treat me like a mental patient. Mental patient.
Do you believe that? Not for a second. Do you realize what this means?
Don't look for it, Taylor.
That's the radio.
Thank you, Mr. Taylor.
And suddenly...
Catano Veloso with The Empty Boat on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM.
Is empty. Yes, my heart is empty from the hold to the heart. From the rudder to the sail. Oh, my boat is empty. Yes, my hand is empty from the waist to the knee. From the ocean to the bay. Oh, the sand is clean. Oh, my mind is clean from the night to the day. Stand to the bar. Oh, my boat is empty. Oh, my head is empty from the nape to the brow. From the east to the west. Oh, the stream is long. Yes, my dream is wrong. From the past to the day. From the east to the west. Oh, the stream is long. Yeah.
is long. Oh, my dream is wrong. From the birth to the death, from the east to the west. Oh, the stream is long. Yes, my dream is long. From the birth to the death.
I'm Tom Rowe at the Wave Farm, and let's hear a voice station from Milaik Silan, a fixed media radio piece composed solely of recorded human voices. It evokes the casual act of radio dialing by presenting a wide range of vocal gestures and textures that loosely resemble sounds associated with radio broadcasting. Each station catalogs distinct timbres of disembodied radio voices, transformed and extended beyond syntax. The piece is the first work of the radio art portfolio of the same name, Voice Station, produced as part of the doctoral research conducted by Milaik Silan at the University of Calgary.
What's interesting is when you feel a sense of almost exchange, that the person speaking through the radio is giving you space to form your own thoughts and your own questions.
I think the radio is something that I haven't appreciated as much as I am, than I should.
I use the radio to tell what time it is.
I love listening to lectures.
It's a great way to hear new people and new music and really get to know the radio hosts.
The person speaking through the radio is giving you space to form your own thoughts and your own questions. Is giving you space to feel a sense of almost exchange. That the person speaking through the radio
is giving you space to feel like the person speaking through the radio is giving you space to feel a sense of almost exchange.
They're simply making an offering to you.
But you almost feel like you're in the hall listening along with them.
For me, that's a voice
from my mouth. So there is no
pretty good
sound
that's resonant,
English
but
expressive,
kind of a mess,
natural,
not the worst.
Not just trying to broadcast.
It's available as a podcast. The phone is
sitting back. Human voice, great some laughter here and there.
The volume's okay. The volume's
laughter.
The volume. The volume.
Yes, the first one is not the first one.
Thank you. The radio is an interesting thing. I remember I used to stay up until 11 p.m., which, you know, at the time I was not very old, and listen to rebroadcasts of radio shows from the 1940s and 50s that used to come on at that time for 2 hours, and you could hear old commercial breaks from way back then, and it was a really neat thing to stay up late and listen to the radio.
I love to turn the lights down very, very low to almost nothing and listen to the radio.
It's a totally different thing from kind of other experiences.
Somehow you feel like they're simply making an offer.
I listen to a lot of audiobooks,
whether it's
kind of like
knowledge, perspective,
kind of podcasts every once in a while,
or just beautiful sound.
Yeah. That's what I know about the radio. That's what I've noticed.
That was Voice Station from Milek Silan. That was Farfisa Gnome Fish Chord from Catskills Rodney Allen Greenbat from his 2021 album To Just Be.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
So I want to make it clear, I'm ready to meet with the speaker anytime, tomorrow, if he has his budget. Lay it down, tell me what you want to do, I'll show you what I want to do, see what we can agree on, if we don't agree on, let's see what we vote on.
President Joe Biden announced a $6.8 trillion budget, including increased spending on the military and a wide array of social programs, which he says will reduce future budget deficits and keep the burden off working families. It calls for $5 trillion in tax increases on high earners and corporations to offset new spending on programs to help the middle class and the poor. Republicans are calling for scaled back spending in the fight over the debt ceiling. Norfolk Southern CEO Alan Shaw testified before the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee about the February train derailment in East Palestine, Ohio. Shaw apologized to the town's residents and said Norfolk Southern is committed to helping them however it can.
Senator, I'm committed to doing what's right. You know, we're going to be there today, tomorrow, a year from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now. I've told the community that. I've been there in person.
According to data from the Federal Railroad Administration, there were 1,164 derailments last year. EPA Regional Administrator Deborah Shore said last month the agency issued an administrative order to hold the company accountable for all EPA costs related to the cleanup and restoration. The GOP-controlled House passed the Protecting Free Speech from Government Interference Act on a party-line vote to prohibit federal employees from censoring speech while acting in an official capacity. New Mexico Democratic Representative Melanie Stansbury described the bill's language as bizarre Orwellian doublespeak, arguing it doesn't protect free speech, but limits it.
It imperils our democracy by handcuffing the ability of law enforcement, national security, and intelligence officials to provide factual, critical information to social media companies and the public.
Passage of this bill comes as the House Select Subcommittee on the Weaponization of the Federal Government conducted a hearing on the Twitter files, which examined internal documents from Twitter about content moderation. Journalist Matt Taibbi and author Michael Schellenberger testified on the contents, and members of the subcommittee engaged in tense exchanges. Louisiana Republican Representative Mike Johnson said it should be a top issue across party lines and for Americans because of free speech implications.
It is a bedrock principle of our constitutional system that the government does not get to decide what speech is acceptable or true. Under the First Amendment, Americans have a right to speak freely regardless of whether their speech upsets the preferred narrative.
I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. In our January 2023 predictions for state anti-voter legislation, we anticipated efforts to make citizen ballot initiatives harder, to keep voters from passing reforms that political parties and legislatures don't like. Sorry to say, we were right. WOSU reports Ohio Republicans are pushing a constitutional amendment which would require signatures from 44 of 88 Ohio counties and raise the threshold to approve a citizen ballot initiative to a 60% supermajority. Ranked choice voting, popular with voters but not with party leaders, was one of the issues cited. Idaho Republicans just passed a proposed constitutional amendment that changes the qualifying signatures requirement. Instead of 6% of Idaho voters statewide, it changes it to 6% of each county. In Missouri, Republican legislators also pushed through a proposed 60% supermajority. Not to be outdone, Florida's Republicans have proposed HJR 129, which raises the bar to a 66% vote. In November, an Arizona ballot measure put forward by Republican legislators attempted to increase the threshold to a 60% majority when it involved taxpayer funding. The voters defeated it, but a similar bill in the Utah House just passed. Expect more of these assaults on direct democracy as extreme legislatures attempt to limit the power of you, the voters. We have much more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Next, we hear a track from the 2003 compilation album, The Shape of Jazz to Come. This is Antipop Consortium with Monstro City.
Midday gravity. Few and far between. The pain leaks from the drips in the ceiling. Filling the buckets overflowing with self-pity. What was I to ponder why? Reasons are led hand in hand by the smoke of her cigarette, and parting ways like strokes in her hair, gentle against her cheek. Gentle against her cheek. Strokes of her hair, and parting ways like the smoke of her cigarette. Reasons are led astray hand in hand by what was I to ponder why? Overflowing with self-pity. Filling the buckets from the drips in the ceiling. The pain leaks few and far between. And the at poem, this started I. Most events of sequence with the began. Discourse to the relevant. Love was there first. Entanglement as itself reconfigured. Soon which love. Folly sad, the into turned, turn in. Which entrapment face we win. Any more here, live, don't love. Irrelevant is, was that love thee so.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Shimani Gibson, 30 years old, died 13 days after giving birth. Amber Rose Isaac, 26, died due to complications of an emergency C-section. Shasia Washington, 26, from undergoing a C-section. Denise Williams, 29, 58 hours after seeking postpartum care for a pulmonary embolism. This list is not exhaustive, but the truth is we know these names, and this is the fear with which we go through the birthing process, oftentimes as Black women. And what we need to remember is that in New York, 78% of maternal deaths in Black individuals were declared preventable. And we know that a crucial piece of combating this maternal mortality crisis is the role of doulas.
That was State Senator Samra Brook speaking on Tuesday, March 7th, at the New York State Senate Health Committee's hearing on a new proposal to integrate doulas into the state medical system and allow Medicaid to reimburse for doula services. Liz Adeo, a birth doula and part of the company Afterglow Albany Birth, explained what a doula does.
We've been giving birth from the dawn of man, and we used to have support, and it really was usually families, or we'd live in villages and we'd be able to support that process. But in our modern day, we really don't have access to that as much as we used to. And so doulas kind of fill the gap. And what they do is support the prenatal, the birth and labor, and the postpartum portion of the first birth year. The ways that we support are through education, information. We give physical support, emotional support through the birthing process. We help people with birth planning and figuring out what their intentions are for the birth. And then we attend the birth with them. And then postpartum, we do support as well with breastfeeding and from hospital to home, that transition.
Her colleague, Saratoga doula Christine Hernandez, addressed the hearing.
The United States is facing a maternal and infant health crisis. Black and brown birthing people are dying of pregnancy and birth-related causes at a rate of, depending on who you ask, sometimes 3, 4, or 5 times higher than white birthers, according to the Centers for Disease Control. In the state of New York, approximately 31% of live births occur by cesarean section, despite the recommendation of 10 to 15% by the World Health Organization. That means 31% of people are sent home 2 to 3 days after having major abdominal surgery to care for a newborn when they aren't even supposed to be walking up a flight of stairs. In addition to the dangers to their physical health, birthing people are also facing a mental health crisis, which has only gotten worse post-COVID. After all the many visits a pregnant person has, after birth there is minimal follow-up care. Most postpartum visits with a care provider are not scheduled until 6 weeks after birth, leaving perinatal mood and anxiety disorders to go unnoticed and untreated. Doulas have long been filling in the gaps in care provided by our mental health care system. Doulas have the unique opportunity to work closely with birthing people and provide physical and emotional support during childbirth and postpartum. Studies have shown that doula support during childbirth lowers the risk of cesarean by up to 39%. And improves maternal health outcomes overall. Shorter labors, less unnecessary medical intervention, and higher APGAR scores for babies. Doulas encourage people to advocate for themselves, letting them know what their rights are as a patient in the hospital system. They also encourage agency and ownership of the birthing experience, helping to combat the discrimination and marginalization that some birthing people face in our medicalized maternal care system. They provide reassurance and emotional security, especially in marginalized communities where people feel disempowered or uncomfortable with their care providers. They help facilitate connection to community resources and develop a relationship with the birthing person that continues long after the postpartum period, leading to a greater sense of connectedness and safety. Having pregnancy support that comes from within people's own communities fosters trust and eases anxiety. Currently, there are many barriers to accessing doula services, and they exist and range from the lack of availability of doulas to financial constraints.
Ms. Adeo explained how the proposed program could work.
So insurance companies are starting to understand the value of our services and how we can apply that through their benefits. Right now, for example, in the Capital District, there's a private insurance, CDPHP, and they have a new program that started in January where they're reimbursing families through their wellness programs up to $1,500 for doula services. So that's a really good reimbursement rate. I think the average for doulas in the state is around $1,200. I think it goes up to $2,500 if you're closer to New York City. So the way that that program works is that you would go through the website and you get reimbursed for what you've paid the doula. It's like for your gym reimbursement, right, or something, right, like that. But for Medicaid, we would actually get our own NPI numbers as doulas, as providers, and we would directly be billing Medicaid for services. I believe in the pilot program, you can bill for 4 prenatal meetings, the labor and birth support, and then 4 postpartum meetings. So they all have their own codes.
And what do you hope will be the results of the hearing?
I'm hoping that through the testimonies given by doulas that they understand the value of what we do and how we really do catch things. You know, in this country, you see your doctor every month, then every 2 weeks, and then every week, and then you have your baby, and then we say goodbye, we'll see you in 6 weeks, and you have a mother who may have some medical needs, maybe even isn't supposed to lift anything heavier than her baby or go up a flight of stairs because she's had a cesarean section, and we're not seeing them until 6 weeks postpartum. So doulas are in the home seeing people, and we catch things. I mean, I've caught my clients having fevers and, you know, having like passing clots and things that really needed attention. And they're busy caring for a newborn, trying to keep a baby alive. So their like health is not necessarily the first thing on their mind. But we are looking, we're really holding that mother and holding that family and holding space for them. And we're catching things. So that's really the value of the doula. And we're hoping that this hearing today, they're understanding that and passing it.
I asked Ms. Odeo what her concerns were as her craft entered the formal medical system.
This is not easy work for a doula. We love our families. We love this work that we're doing, but it is not sustainable if the payout rates for doulas are too low. So in the way back years ago, when they were first, before the pilot program, they were I think they were reimbursing doulas like $400 for everything, which is just not sustainable. You think about, you know, a doula working in New York City where it's so expensive to live. And, you know, we're only one person. We can't just take tons and tons of clients. Like, we are up, you know, on call all the time. We are not sleeping. You know, we're in hospitals for days, sleeping on floors sometimes. So there's only one of us and we can only help so many people. So the reimbursement rate really does need to be something that's sustainable for our work and values the time that we put into each client. Because the reason why doulas are valuable, the reason why we reduce cesarean rates, shorten labors, is built on the trust that's built between the client and the doula over the period of time that we're working together. That's a lot of work to build that trust. And it really requires a lot of exposure to the family and understanding, you know, what their needs are, what their individual intentions are for the birth. So I think in terms of sustainability, it needs to be a good rate of reimbursement. Mm-hmm. And that's on the doula end of things. On the client end, it needs to be something that's easily understandable as to why it could be valuable for them. So it does probably need to come with some literacy around why they might want a doula for a birth, and a lot of outreach when it comes to, you know, basically just saying, hey, this is a service that you can get, you know, for free, basically.
Senator Samra Brooke closed the testimony on Tuesday with a note of optimism.
If you had asked me a year and a half ago if I would be sitting here in front of a room full of people with doulas from actually all over the country, I probably would have said that's probably not going to happen that quickly. But the fact that we are at what I'm deeming Doula Day is tremendous, and it shows that we have the right people in the right positions to finally move this forward on a state level and hopefully to be a model for the states who have not quite figured it out as well as we have. So My commitment to you all is to continue to bring you all to the table, whether you're community-based doulas, whether you're providers, otherwise people who have experienced doula care, because those are the voices that have to continue to inform the decisions we make as policymakers, but also as people with lived experience, knowing what it's like. So our mothers deserve better, our children deserve better, and we're committed to doing better. So thank you all so much.
Reporting for Hudson Mohawk Magazine, this is Moses Nagel.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
That was Spring Hill Jack with their 2001 song Churrascaro from their Masses album.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Chris Giraldi reports in New York Focus that not only are New York prison officials ignoring the recently passed Humane Alternatives to Long-Term Solitary Confinement Act, which placed strict limits on prison isolation, but the Department of Corrections and Community Supervision recently updated regulations, and I quote, re-enshrining Doce's long-standing disregard of the law's foundational tenets, end quote, according to the publication. After a recent story by New York Focus about how prisoners were still being put into solitary confinement, 52 state legislators sent a letter to New York's prison department last week criticizing Doce's for flouting the solitary confinement law. The lawmakers wrote, and I quote, "We write with ongoing grave concerns that Doce's not only continues to violate HALT, but now is failing to remedy many deficiencies in its previous regulations that we and others pointed out and that are part of the reason these violations continue to occur," end quote. The legislators also complained that prisons were allowing staff to rescind incarcerated people's visitation privileges as punishment for any infraction of prison rules, when before they could only revoke visitation over drug or visitation-related offenses. The letter states, and I quote, "The vast restrictions on visits and packages are abusive for incarcerated people and their children and other family members. They will all likely lead to increased tension, increased violence, increased drug use, increased suicide, and worsened safety for incarcerated people and staff," end quote. A Doce spokesperson would only say that the department, and I quote, "will review and respond to all